This is the Page Publishing Book Club. How you doing? I'm Alice Stockton-Rossini. The race is on to mine lithium. It's the new oil. And Neil Gibbons brings us a very unique perspective in his book, The Lithium Caper.
It's going to be the most important commodity in the new industrial revolution. That's the renewable energy. So we don't have any, and we've been looking for it, but we're well behind the Chinese in the search for lithium. And so in the book, we nominate a young fellow who is a bit of a scoundrel to go get a lithium mine in Uzbekistan. And the book is about his trials and tribulations mixed with some of the realities of that region.
Are you familiar with that region?
Very.
So what are some of the trials and tribulations?
Well, he has to overcome the Taliban. He has to overcome the Russian mafia. And he has to overcome a couple of intelligence services from, not the least of which is our own. And of course, we have this exotic Uzbek princess. So we throw this fella into that mix and see how he does.
How does he get this job?
Well, his father was in the CIA. And the people who nominate him for this job are the CIA, who inspire his boss at the bank to put him in charge of this project. He's got a flair for languages as well as women, and he's the ideal candidate, at least on paper, to get this job done for the United States and for his employer.
He either succeeds or he doesn't by the end. He either pulls off the lithium caper or he doesn't.
Well, we don't want to talk about that. And you see, it's a setup.
Well, I figure, you know, he's dealing with people in Uzbekistan, the Russian mob, the CIA, the DEA. Why wouldn't it go wrong?
Yeah.
How could it go right?
Well, he could get the rights of the lithium for the Americans. And that's what he set out to do by financing this project in Uzbekistan. So in order to get it financed and get it away from the Chinese and the Russians and the Koreans, he has to go through a bunch of hoops.
So we find out at the end whether he succeeds.
That's correct.
All right. So are you, you've never written before this?
No, I haven't.
So what made you write this now?
I don't know. It's been something I wanted to do for a very long time. And I thought, well, with my experience in Central Asia and Russia and Uzbekistan and all the banking projects that I've put together, I felt I had a book in me, so I wanted to do it, and I finally did it.
Well, with your kind of background, I would think you bring some realism to this story.
Well, that's very much what I did.
All right. You going to keep writing, Neil? I mean, is there a follow-up to this book?
I think so. My friends have encouraged me to do a sequel on this character because, well, I should tell you, that he was modeled after Harry Flashman. There was a series of books about Flashman written by a fellow named George MacDonald Fraser, and it's historical fiction. And they insert this rogue into every major event in the reign of Queen Victoria. He's in Afghanistan. He makes the charge of the Light Brigade. He's there for the sepoy mutiny in India. There for Custer's last stand in the United States. he's a rogue, and everybody loves him. So I modeled Mitch Nolan, the main character in my book, after Flashman. And he's an American Flashman. He's not a British or an Irish Flashman. Probably got Irish blood in him.
Probably.
I'm a bit of a rogue, and he likes the jar, as I do.
The jar.
You know what I mean, a jar of Guinness.
A pint? I guess that's what the British say, right? And we don't want to say that.
That's right. They still, not 2.03 liters.
All right, Neil, thanks so much. A professional bird dog trainer in California specializing in hunting dogs, Steve Ryder, has written 3 books for Page about training dogs, including Dogs That Are Just Pets. The name of his book, All Dogs Are From Missouri, but you're not in Missouri, right?
No, I'm actually in California. Are you? You must be getting that from the book. The tagline was basic obedience, the show me way. So that's how I got the Missouri thing. And I tell people all the time is when I'm training, I tell them the first thing I tell them is all dogs are from Missouri. And they're kind of surprised. What? And I go, yeah, you know, all dogs, you know what Missouri is, don't you? And they go, no, some of them, I might get one out of 10. Say, yeah, it's a show me state. And I said, yeah, that's exactly right. So when you're, if a dog would ever look up at you and say, hey, don't tell me, show me, you know, show me what you want me to do, make sure I understand it. And then you reinforce that behavior. So that's how I came up with the idea for the title, All Dogs Are From Missouri. And so I did the book, and now all the non-hunting people are very happy, I guess. I try to make it as simple as I possibly can. And I'm one of those guys that I don't get complicated. Again, it's all based on the show me. We get too sophisticated and really don't know how to talk to dogs without really talking to them. So it's all about the show me. You know, you can blab and do things and talk to them all day long, but if you don't actually take them through a routine and tell them what that routine is, they're not going to get it. And it's just so much easier. If I have a dog and I'm telling it to sit, like I see it all the time, people come up and they'll tell their dog to sit and the dog doesn't sit. You know, it just kind of looks at the customer and they say, sit, sit. They might say it 7 times and the dog finally sits. And then the next time they say it, the dog sits on the first time and they go, oh, okay, he's got it. And then the third time they say it again and he sits on the 10th time. Well, they're not connecting the action with the word. So the action is showing them. So I usually start when I train dogs, I don't really talk to them. The puppies that I train and stuff, I don't really talk to them for probably the first 2 weeks. I'm actually taking them through the motions. So it's like I tell people, you tape your mouth and train your dog. What would you do? If you couldn't talk to your dog, what would you do? Well, you communicate with body language. So I'm going to put him in a sitting position. You know, I'm going to raise up on the leash and push down on his hinds and slide back. So that's it. So every time I go through it, and then I connect the word with the action. So that's where the show me comes in. You know, it's just like trying to train how are you going to train a dog that's deaf, right? You can't talk to him. You can't tell him sit. So what are you going to do? You have to show them, right? So that's the basic principle of training. So everything that you do is you just take them through the motions, because that's how they communicate through body language, right? And so that's what we do. And then the stay is just basically holding up your hand, moving away from the dog, holding your hand up and moving away. Move is patting them on the top of the head and then start forward with your feet. It's all with your feet when you're getting them to move forward, to start walking. And the healing is tapping your, you know, while you're walking, and you want your dog to heal on your left or right leg. It's tapping on your knee, and you're walking. And every time it goes forward, goes past your knee, because you want the shoulder of the dog off your left or right knee. And if they go ahead of you, you just kind of pull back a little bit on the leash. Tap your leg at the same time your dog turns ahead and looking right at you. It's just doing it over and over and over again. That's how dogs are learning. You know, I go a couple days and I just started introducing the words to the dog. So sit, stay, hear, come, heel. That means you want them off your left or right side. Down means lay down. Off means off. It's not the words that really makes the difference. You can teach the dog to sit on Texas. I could say Texas and they'd sit. I could say Missouri and they'd come to me. It's not the word. Why do you think that dogs learn other languages? They're not learning this. Sit in Italian's not sit, right?
You're pretty well known, right? You're pretty well known for what you do.
Yes, I am. I mean, I've had people come from all over California, and I've had them outside the state of California and work with me. And I'm a one-on-one trainer. That's another difference between me and other trainers. I believe in the one-on-one stuff. So I work with the dog, not only the dog, I'm working with the client. And that's why I wrote the books. The books are written that if you get the book, honest to God, I try to make it so simple that you wouldn't ever have to see a trainer.
All right, Steve. Very interesting. Thank you. Paul Brogan teaches film classes in New Hampshire, but before that, he worked in nonprofits raising money for people with HIV/AIDS. Paul came out as gay when he was 10, and it wasn't easy. He shares his story in his book, A Sprinkling of Stardust Over the Outhouse, Musings, Memories, Madness, and Pillow Talk.
My book is my story. As I approach 70, it's an opportunity to share the good, the bad, and the ugly, and show how I, you know, overcame different obstacles and things. And you can do it too out there, because we're all stronger than we think. We're not nearly as able to be, you know, battered down unless we let people do that and don't get back up and say, well, I'm going to go out and I'm going to reinvent myself. Because I figure I didn't start writing until after 50, so we can always reinvent ourselves if we don't like what we were doing, or if it no longer brings, you know, the rewards.
Well, in the 80s, when you were in Peter Pan, where were you?
And that was in West Springfield, Massachusetts. Always wanted to do it, and I looked good in tights.
Oh.
So that was, for me, a dream come true. I'd grown up watching Mary Martin go, you know, and I said, I can crow, and I look great in tights. Why can't I play the part? Just because women always play the part. So there's a reason why women always play the parts. The flying equipment that they use and the way it hitches around certain areas of your body is not designed particularly to be comfortable with men. It, when they tug you to lift you up to fly, you hit notes you never thought you could hit before when you're singing. That lurch as you go up. But
it's like those skinny bike seats.
Yes, or falling off a bike seat, yes, and not falling sideways either. But it was one of those things that people said, oh, you can't do that. When other people run your life for you and tell you what dreams you're supposed to have, that's never a good thing. It's only when you take control and accept the failures and enjoy the successes. That's the only way you're going to have happiness and peace of mind and still have enthusiasm when you're more mature about doing things. That, you know, my parents wanted me to be a teacher when I was 17. Well, I didn't want to be, but now I like teaching film classes because it's on my terms. I think, you know, the message of the book is to thine own self be true ultimately, and you know, and that's what it amounts to.
Well, what was the biggest obstacle you had to overcome, would you say?
The biggest obstacle was being raped at knife point at Plymouth State College when I was there. And this was an era 50 years ago when women didn't have outlets to go to if they were raped, and the notion of a man being raped was not anything you could comprehend, and it wasn't something you went to a doctor and said, oh, by the way, this week my roommate held a knife at my throat and raped me. So you keep it inside, and it does not go away. People say, oh, yeah, eventually, you know, just push it deep down inside, and it's out of sight, out of mind, and you don't have to worry. But no, it comes back to haunt you, and it's like a cancer. If you don't address it eventually, it's going to erode your self-worth, self-esteem, and your interactions with other people. It gives you a darkness. And so it took a long, long time to move beyond that. But you can, again, if you are willing to face the demons and recognize that, you know, you can't let them control you ultimately. You need to control them.
So true, Paul. Thanks so much. If you ever wondered how different it could be growing up in New York City than moving to California, Alexandra Sloan's got the story in her book, Cabin in the Woods, or How a Kid from Brooklyn Wound Up with 20 Acres of Deer Poop.
I moved from Manhattan, Brooklyn, and then into Manhattan when I met my husband, Robert, who also worked for ABC Television. He worked out of the West Coast division. I did the East. And I moved to Los Angeles. That was culture shock because from, you know, New York to L.A., it was complete different mentalities. They drive differently, obviously. In Manhattan, everybody's just trying to get to someplace. We're all these little mice in a maze, and, you know, lanes of traffic is only a suggestion. Everybody's just trying to get somewhere. And so you get flipped off, you get yelled at, but nobody harbors grudges. In Los Angeles, if heaven forbid you cut somebody off by accident, they'll follow you for 20 miles. In Manhattan, or in, I should say in New York City, basically, especially in the boroughs like Queens and Brooklyn, where I came from, you've got three and four generations living in one house. No privacy for newlyweds, but everybody was all done out of love. You come to Los Angeles and you hear the, well, we'll get a starter home. What the heck is a starter home? Well, it's a little house that you buy when you get married and you start then trading it in and getting a bigger one and trade it in to get a bigger one. And I said, this is insane. I want one house where I can raise my children and have my family and end of story. And that is what my husband and I wound up doing. He got a job up here in Northern California in what I would consider a urban-rural community, east of Sacramento, west of Lake Tahoe. So we're up in the Sierra foothills. The joke here is basically you're below the snow and above the fog. I mean, in Los Angeles, you drive to your next-door neighbor. You know, that's really the joke, is everybody takes a car even if they're going next door. Here, you absolutely had to drive. Anything you want, like a mall, is going to be 45, 50 miles away. So it was a little bit of culture shock. I had been used to a certain amount of anonymity in Brooklyn or Manhattan and then into Los Angeles. You could go into a market and, you know, you got recognized just simply that you were a neighborhood person. Up here, everyone knows you. And if they don't know you, they know somebody who knows you. So it's very community-oriented in that respect. When my son started skiing, and they had a ski club started by a number of the mothers, they would take them up to Tahoe on the bus, which, of course, I would be waiting out there at 3 o'clock in the morning to sign them up for the bus. I was petrified if I drove them up there on a Friday night, it would wind up being like the Donner Party. And that he'd be asked down the line of, oh, does it taste like chicken? So I always made sure 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm out there in my beach chair and sitting with my hot chocolate to make sure he got his lessons and got on the bus. We've got bears. We've got coyotes. We deal with more than just crazed squirrels. We have all this wildlife, deer, turkeys, quail. We have all of this out here. And I had never been like, and now I'm like Snow White, only with bears and deer and things like that. Though we have insane hummers, but they don't land on my finger and sing. But also it's a difference in many ways between men and women and how they think. When we decided to build this house that we live in, my husband just had to go out there before the excavators came. And he was going to rip something out of the ground. I figured it was kind of like the human male equivalent of a dog lifting his leg on everything to mark his territory. So I humored him. Okay, fine. He had a large SUV at the time with a huge winch on it. So he got a 2-inch chain link, tied it around this poor little 1-inch in diameter pine tree, and he was going to pull this sucker out of the ground. Wraps it around, hooks it to the winch, starts the car. The back wheels of the car are now off the ground spinning, and this tree is not moving a millimeter. Finally, the chain splits with this absolute ear-piercing sound. I said, Robert, I think you can stop the car now, you know? And he gets out and looks, and sure enough, the chain had broken. It's laying in a circle around the bottom of this pine tree, and the tree is still there. I was laughing so hard I couldn't look at him. I was about ready to pee in my pants. life has wonderful possibilities and all kinds of interesting things if you're open to it. The story is basically the adjustment of raising a family in a completely different environment and just being open to all kinds of new things.
So true, Alexandra. Thank you. Sergeant Nobody is the name of our next author who has a burning desire to unite America and gives us some suggestions in his book, Our Patriotic Nightmare. But I have to ask you, why Sergeant Nobody?
I'm a nobody, and I'm trying to do something really stupid and impossible. So, I mean...
What, write a book?
Not just write a book, but the book is about, you know, uniting America like never before. Like, I feel like it's the only way forward for us. And I broke my leg last year, which is not a good way to start a story of inspiration, but I couldn't do anything on my feet for at least 6 months. I was watching a show called Sons of Liberty, and it's all about events leading up to the Declaration of Independence. And I think people lose focus on the fact that a handful of men from Boston, they were nobodies in the face of the world. And they had this idea, and they were willing to risk their lives in order to achieve this goal. They had to convince the founding fathers that unity was the only way forward. And it took a lot of effort on their part, and luckily they did it. And I think it's amazing to look at how far we've come as a country over, less than 250 years. But we also have so much negative at the same time. And unfortunately, we live in a society where people focus on more the negative than the positive. My book is about uniting people, not the government uniting people of America. I'm talking about it's our responsibility to unite ourselves. So shouldn't the government's focus be the betterment of its people? That was the vision. They wanted this place to be where you go to have a better life. And people still believe that. But now, based on the events of recent years, we're trying to put a big do not enter sign on the borders of America. But in order for us to unite, we have to talk about issues that nobody wants to talk about. We have to bluntly talk about racism. It's a choice, okay? Racism, you're choosing to have a closed mind. You're choosing to be ignorant. That's all it is, okay? Honestly, to me, as a white man in America, it's embarrassing that people are still judged by the color of their skin. We should be setting the shining example of progress to the rest of the world. These are our two options. Either we can unite like never before and build a future for our future generations that they can be proud of, that they can look forward to, or we can do what we're doing right now and just continue the violence, the nonsense, the hatred, and just watch the country rip itself apart on 24-hour news networks. You know what I'm saying? It's not just racism, because I just picked racism as an example, because I honestly think that is the number one problem facing the future of America. But I also talk about things like climate change. I talk about economic oppression, conditional freedom. And I mean, I even talk about the legalization of cannabis on a federal level, based on scientific evidence, not how somebody thinks they feel about the topic. It's been proven over and over that cannabis is not only the safest, but probably the most effective drug in the world, yet it's still illegal on a federal level. But pharmaceutical companies are allowed to pump poisonous chemicals, unnatural chemicals into our bodies on a daily basis, and they can advertise it on television. Doesn't make sense to a lot of people. I know it doesn't make sense to anybody that enjoys using cannabis, because it's something we've been confused about for 20 years. You know, there's also other things like the crazy laws that we have in place. Yeah, but like Nevada, okay? Nevada. It is illegal to own sex toys.
Where prostitution's legal, it's illegal to own a sex toy?
Yes.
How would they know you have one?
I have no idea, and I don't want to be the one to go kicking doors down looking for sex products, but like stuff like that exists that makes no sense. I mean, I want people to know that I'm just a single father trying to raise two teenagers and get through another day in America. You know what I mean? I want to show people that struggle can create strength.
All right, Sergeant. I think we all can relate to that. Amy Ann Fuller is a merchant seaman who never thought he'd be able to write a book after dealing with a lifetime of learning disabilities, but he has overcome them and published The Trust.
What happened was I read the Tina Turner book, Itina. I was on an airplane going to Africa, and I was like, man, I can make a lot of this stuff up. So my book is fiction. But what I did was I used my information when I was a kid up until I was about 18. Really, I wrote the book in 4 months. What happened with me is when I started writing, I just kept getting all this information. I already had the ending. So I was just like, just start, just do it. And I just started going and my brain just was going haywire. Just get it out your head. I barely could type and I just had my first laptop and I was just like going, just my brain was just going. I go to work and do my watches or whatever. And then when I get off my watch, I will go and just write. And I start asking certain stuff that I didn't know, because back then when I wrote the book, I couldn't say, hey, Google or Siri or Alexa, you know what I'm saying? I had to ask people different stuff. So it would, and then the information that I already knew.
So what's the story? This guy, Nevin.
Nevin is a hermaphrodite. And he looks like a regular boy, but he has both sex organs. And he can also have babies. When it comes to my family, I'm the only boy in my generation. So I twisted that in it. And it's, I grew up with all women until I was 14. Nevin winds up starting having babies from this guy who becomes a big celebrity. And they have to hide the fact that Nevin has these children. But with the some of the story is about the family, all of the women, the family was cursed because one of the aunties back right after slavery, when they pretend like they was white. She went and started sleeping with all the people, all the men, and start stealing their property to add to their property. They did have money, but this particular aunt, great aunt, was stealing property from all these men. And when the white women found out, they cursed them. And that's how they almost went broke and lost all of their land, even the land that they had stolen and everything that they owned. So what happened was she started dating a moonshine guy. The property was cursed. You couldn't grow nothing on it. So they went and got hogs and built a still and started running moonshine. And Nevin's grandmother, her mother started dating. He was Lucky Luciano, coming to get moonshine and do deals with the family. So he took her and took her to New York. And that's how they started getting their money back. She was a madam. She was beautiful. And she looked like she was a white woman. So she ran everything. He knew she was black. So she was tricking everybody. And she just started sending money home. But every time she had babies, she had six of them, she sent all of the babies back home to Alabama, to the country.
So what happens to Nevin?
It was a trust fund set up for the family. That's why the name of the book is The Trust. But Granny took care of the whole family with the money. And it was money. And Nevin is very trusting and he's very giving. So that's why the name of the book is called The Trust. And I'm going to finish it with the second book with Terry. It's going to be called Terrica the Terror and Her Super Friends.
All right, Amian. And that's it for this edition of the Page Publishing Book Club. Download our podcast at 710WOR.com. I'm Alice Stockton Rossini.